Hello, this is Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, February 5th, 2026. Champaign County Board, brief ban on data centers proposed. Officials want a year to develop and enact regulations on zoning and water usage. Champaign County officials are considering implementing a one-year ban on the development of large data centers so that zoning regulations can be developed for such projects. Planning and Zoning Director John Hall said he is aware of one such project that might choose to locate in the county. It might be coming, he told the News Gazette. We don't have an application, and as far as I know, it's not like we're going to receive an application anytime soon. But we do expect one eventually. He was told the potential project site is west of Champaign in the Rising area. The development was described to him as being about 300 acres, which indicates the facility would be much larger than any data center we've approved to date. By comparison, Colocation Plus data centers on Chestnut Street in Champaign and International Avenue in Rantoul are each located on properties no larger than a couple of acres, and the National Petascale Computing Facility at the University of Illinois is an 88,000-square-foot facility. It's been reported that these large data centers can end up using a lot of water, depending on what type of cooling system they use, Hall said. And as I told this company when they contacted me, we value our Mahama aquifer. We don't want to see groundwater being used to cool a building unless it's done in a very conservative way. He added that members of the public have also expressed concerns about energy usage. However, it's his understanding that a data center can't get an interconnection agreement if the energy isn't there. We want to have energy usage be something that is explained in the applications so that the county board can consider that, Hall said. As part of the efforts to regulate large data centers, the county board's Environmental and Land Use Committee will vote tonight on authorizing a public hearing for a 12-month development moratorium on data centers with at least 10,000 square feet of processing area, authorizing a public hearing on a zoning ordinance amendment to add regulations for big data centers, recommending that county board approve a resolution to create a task force that will refine the proposed zoning ordinance amendment on big data centers as needed. The county board has implemented a similar approach when it comes to drafting carbon sequestration regulations. Hall hopes to have the Zoning Board of Appeals vote on the proposed moratorium March 26th, with the matter potentially returning to ELUC in April, followed by a county board vote later that month. As for the task force, he hopes to have its creation authorized by the county board sometime this month. The idea is that the task force will meet about 3 to 4 times to discuss the zoning ordinance amendment, Hall said. He described the current version of the amendment as a starting point for that group. Whatever text amendment they're going to end up recommending would have to go back to the Environmental Land Use Committee to be authorized for a public hearing at the Zoning Board of Appeals, he said. Then we would have a public hearing at the Zoning Board of Appeals. That would be at least a couple of zoning board meetings, maybe no more than that. The zoning board would then make a recommendation to ELUC, who would in turn make a recommendation to the county board. The county board would then vote on whether to adopt the change. The proposed resolution states that the task force will present its recommendations to ELUC within 3 months of the group's first meeting. Additionally, the task force may include representatives from the following groups: the Engineering Construction Industry Training Board, Urbana and Champaign Sanitary District, Champaign County Planning and Zoning, Champaign County Farm Bureau, Champaign County Economic Development Corporation, Champaign County Chamber of Commerce, Prairie Rivers Network, Champaign County Board of Review Chair, Illinois American Water, Ameren, and community members. The current version of the proposed zoning ordinance amendment would require big data center projects to obtain a special use permit from the county board rather than just the Zoning Board of Appeals, Hall said. We already allow data centers just with a special use permit by the zoning board. But I think given the public concerns about these big data centers, I'm convinced that there should be a county board approval, he said. The proposed zoning ordinance amendment would define big data centers as facilities that have at least 10,000 square feet of processing area or are rated at 10 megawatts or more, while the term data center would apply to facilities with less than 10,000 square feet of processing area and a rating of less than 40 megawatts. Under the draft amendment, big data centers would be allowed by county board special use permits in the A2 agriculture, B4 general business, and I1 light industry zoning districts. Data centers that fall into the smaller category will continue to be allowed zoning board special use permits in these same districts. In regards to water, the amendment states the use of groundwater and or use of water from a public water supply system for cooling the processors, other equipment, and buildings in the big data center shall be limited to closed-loop cooling systems. According to the Environmental and Energy Study Institute, closed-loop cooling systems enable the reuse of both recycled wastewater and freshwater, allowing water supplies to be used multiple times. A cooling tower can use external air to cool the heated water, allowing it to return to its original temperature. These systems can reduce freshwater use by up to 70%. Andrew Rain, Director of Climate Policy at Prairie Rivers Network, said that water and energy usage are both concerns when it comes to large data center projects. Evaporative cooling is using water but letting it evaporate away, and that can be extremely water consumptive, he said. A closed-loop system doesn't evaporate nearly as much water. It probably will have losses like anything, but not nearly as much as an evaporative system. So that is definitely a step up. Rain noted that a closed-loop system does use more electricity, but he still believes it to be a better option of the two. He added that the Prairie Rivers Network is working with environmental partners across the state to introduce legislation regarding data centers that would address both water protection and energy usage issues. The county's proposed zoning ordinance amendment also outlines information that would need to be included in the permit application for a big data center, including a description of the proposed cooling system and an estimate of the total direct water usage for cooling, including amounts of groundwater and/or water from the public supply that would be utilized. An engineer's explanation of how the use of either water source for cooling will be minimized as much as possible. Documentation showing that the applicant is in line to acquire an interconnection agreement to the power grid. An explanation of the project's expected impact on electric power grid reliability and electricity pricing. Documentation of an executed interconnection agreement with the appropriate electric utility shall be provided prior to issuance of a zoning compliance certificate to authorize operation of the big data center, the proposed amendment states. Additionally, the development would have to share a copy of their special use permit application within any municipality within 1.5 miles of the proposed project site. The proposed zoning ordinance amendment also details requirements for setbacks, steps that must be taken to protect agricultural drainage, noise levels, fencing, and screening if the project site is located near a dwelling. There's a picture on the front page of the News Gazette with the headline, "Shooting Their Shot," and the caption, "From left, Lake Anderson, Bennett Milisogolo, and Creighton Kirby, all 9 years old, try to convince the State Farm Center, MC, that birthday boy Brody Fordyce, 10, deserves a free T-shirt at Wednesday's matchup between Illinois and Northwestern. The Illini ran away with the game in the first half and never looked back, finishing 84-44. See you at home. Mid-Barrier Shelter aims for March opening. Facility's goal is to help residents exit homelessness. A little over a year after announcing its plans to locate a mid-barrier shelter and staff offices in a commercial building at 1207 South Mattis Avenue, Champaign-Urbana, at home could be just a month away from bringing their dream to life. I think we're looking right now, it's most likely a March 1st date, to move some existing clients into the building, with the new client intakes following on March 16th, Executive Director Melissa Courtwright said. The organization is currently looking at a late February move-in for staff who will go through some training in the space before city clients move in. The facility will have 16 beds for men and 10 for women. Unlike emergency shelter services where clients may access a bed without committing to services, the Mid-Barrier program is for those ready to engage in an intensive structured process toward independence, Courtwright said previously. There haven't been any major challenges with renovations to the new facility, she said. However, she did note that CU at Home learned they would have to replace the building's HVAC system and have been working with contractors and funders to make this work. The organization has launched a capital campaign to help fund the HVAC work and program furnishings to create a home-like environment, and the goal is to raise $500,000. Our capital campaign also reflects all the trauma-informed care and the stability of the environment that we're putting into it, Courtwright said. The organization has contacted long-term supporters and major donors as part of an initial quiet phase. She said she expects to do an official launch following one winter night, CU at Home's annual effort to raise both funds and awareness. Participants pledge to raise $1,000 and spend the night outside to better understand the experiences of the local homeless population. This Keystone event, which is set for Friday, helps the organization provide shelter year-round and give its clients 24/7 support, Courtwright said. It's obviously hugely important in the expansion that we're doing, she added. So in order to really feel like this is a true expansion of our work, we're not only opening the Mattis location, but we're making sure that we can maintain the 7 houses that we currently have. And so for us, one winter night always feels important, but this year it feels especially important. As of Wednesday afternoon, 88 people had signed up, and more than $26,000 had been raised. The goal is to raise $90,000. Those wishing to sign up or can give can go to 2p1cause.com/own2026. Additionally, an individual has donated 4 premium tickets to a Fighting Illini men's basketball game to be raffled off in support of the event. The tickets are for the Wisconsin versus Illinois game on February 10, 2026, located in Section 230, Row 6, Seats 7 through 10 on the aisle, and include a parking pass to the Southwest parking lot. CU at Home officials. Sorry, I lost my plates. CU at Home officials said raffle entries are $25 per entry, and participants may enter as many times as they wish. The winning entrant can receive the tickets and parking pass electronically. Community members can enter at p2p.onecause.com/own2026/ILVSWI. When asked how she feels about the state of homelessness in Champaign County as the new year begins, Courtwright replied the area has seen an increase in homelessness over the past 3 years, and there are a lot of really good partners looking at not just joining short-term but long-term solutions. For us at CU at Home, we're thinking about how we really get people to a point of stability so that when they leave our program, they're not just leaving a program, they're exiting homelessness, she said. We've got to have a system in place that meets people where they are, provides them with the support that they need so that they can find stability. And I'm excited about conversations I've had hearing in our community and the planning that's going into how do we actually do this. Champaign County's point-in-time count of homeless individuals has shown an upward trend in recent years. 2022, 137. 2023, 215. 2024, 279. 2025, 355. According to Cunningham Township Supervisor Danielle Chenoweth, the emergency winter shelter operated by her office in late November had sheltered 103 unique residents and was taking in about 55 to 60 men each night as of January 6th. We expect that number may rise a bit when the next cold snap hits, she said at the time, but we are also helping people access employment, housing, and reunification with friends and family every week, so we also see exits of residents to greater stability. Chenoweth, who chairs the Continuum, added the rates of homelessness are high, not just locally but across the state and nation. The number of people experiencing homelessness on a single night in 2024 was the highest ever recorded, U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development officials wrote in an announced annual homelessness assessment report to Congress. A total of 771,480 people, or about 23 of every 10,000 people in the United States, experienced homelessness in a shelter. In an emergency shelter, safe haven, transition housing program, or in unsheltered locations across the country. Illinois saw a 116% increase in homelessness in 2024, with 13,885 more people than the year before. HUD reported the state's point-in-time count for 2024 was 25,832, its highest figure in the past 18 years of reporting. As heard on News Gazette Radio, what separates the University of Illinois flagship campus from the rest of the higher ed pack when it comes to groundbreaking cancer research? For one, Cancer Center of Illinois Director Rohit Bhargava said Wednesday on News Gazette Radio, it's an emphasis on this question, how do we accelerate the search for cures by using our expertise in engineering as well as veterinary medicine? The same cancers present in humans sometimes can present in our pet cats and dogs. How can we use the drugs developed here on our campus, test them with our veterinary companion animals, and move them very quickly to human trials? On World Cancer Day, the professor who doubles as the U of I's Granger Distinguished Chair in Engineering, discussed the number of Urbana faculty currently devoted to research, upwards of 130, expressed optimism about the federal funding outlook, and explained why it's important that the search for cures is led by the U.S. The United States was a leader in cancer research without a doubt 5 years ago, he said, but with a lack of focus and not investing in new areas, other countries are also coming up rather quickly. In general, I believe cures, wherever they are found, will eventually make it all the way across the world. But we're not leading in the United States, but we don't get those cures first, number one. Number two, we sometimes don't get to dictate what the price of those cures will be. Healthcare costs are a big concern for all of us, and one way it's discovering new therapies that are cheaper, and that, using engineering, we might be able to deliver the same quality of care at lower costs. In the works, what Urbana Park District Executive Director Rachel Lenz described as a complete overhaul of 59-year-old King Park, following word last week that it was awarded $600,000 open space land acquisition and development grant from the state. Combined with $600,000 of park district funds, the revitalization project will bring new everything, a playground with more amenities than the 20-year-old current version has, a multi-use path, multi-purpose field, two basketball courts, one full, one half, a cool spot for teens to hang out, and much more, Lenz said. Teacher of the Week, Angela West, 5th grade, Westview Elementary School, Champaign. Angela West has spent 3 years in her 19-year career at Westview Elementary School in Champaign, where she teaches 5th grade and she already calls the school her home away from home. West has spent her career teaching 3rd, 4th, and 5th graders using creative, interactive lessons to engage her students, including a lesson in which she made the classroom into an escape room and one in which she turns her classroom into outer space. I find my work important because it is the beginning of all the careers in the entire world. I became a teacher because I want to help children. I originally wanted to be a pediatrician, but realized that I couldn't help children the way I wanted to if I only saw them once a year. I decided education would be a better fit because I could form relationships with more young people and help them grow academically and emotionally. My favorite or most unique lesson that I teach is our astronomy unit in Core Knowledge Language Arts. We spend weeks learning about all things space, and we start finishing up the unit. My students conduct their own research on something that interests them during our lessons. They then create their own reports on their topics, and we celebrate their success by turning our classroom into space. We also invite parents in our school to educate them on our findings. My most fulfilling moments on the job are when former students reach out to me to let me know how much I meant to them. It melts my heart to know their 1 year with me helped them in so many ways, not just academically. I keep students engaged by creating lessons that allow them to discuss and collaborate, extend their thinking, and be creative. Something else I'm passionate about is teaching the whole child. Being a teacher isn't just about teaching reading and math. There is so much more to it. I love teaching my students socio-emotional lessons. It is incredible to witness a child being able to grow in their self-confidence, self-regulation, and self-love throughout the year. This piece of learning, along with academics, helps children become productive members of society, and that is one of my goals for all of my students. My favorite teacher or subject to study in school was Mrs. Janet Vallow, my science teacher and cheerleading coach in Mahomet. What I loved about Mrs. Vallow is that she was always honest. If I was not doing my best, she would let me know. She was always the one who stood by my side and cheered me on, and she also was firm and fair. She was such an intelligent teacher and had a way of delivering material that made it easy to understand. If I weren't her teacher, I would be a pediatrician. Biology was always my favorite subject growing up, and babysitting was my favorite job in my teens. If I wasn't a teacher, I would be following my passion for biology and helping children this way. Mike Hale's Records and Radio column. Radio personality's career makes for a compelling read. Writing for a newspaper is a rather recent endeavor in my media career. Something I am very much enjoying, gathering material for my next column is an ongoing process, but what happens when key ingredients don't materialize in time for a deadline? We're going to find out. But first, a quiz question. Last column we talked about music streaming numbers from 2025. Dennis Fitzgibbon shared a fascinating list of the more than 300 music videos on YouTube that each have achieved more than a billion views. Name the most viewed song by a male and the most viewed song by a female. Answers at the end of the column. A disc jockey turned author, a man I've never met, saved me in preparing this column with little time to spare. It's not surprising that I have read a lot of books that chronicle the lives of radio personalities. Most of the books are about nationwide household names, just personalities applying their skills in a regional setting. Authors include Chicago personalities like Tommy Edwards, Connie Surzin, Clark Weber, Roger Treemstra, Mary D., and Mitch Michaels. How about those book titles? Disc Jockeys, Preachers, and Elvis, 2023 by Ron Brandon, who was a top 40 star in markets across the South. Drunk and Disorderly Again, 2009, by Claude Hoot Hooten, a.k.a. Brad Edwards, from Houston to Los Angeles. Dead Air, The Rise and Demise of Music Radio, 2011, by KILT Houston's Bill Young. Do Not Air, 2019, by Nancy Plum, chronicling her 50-year career in radio. A DJ's Spin, 2015, by Dick Williams, a superstar in London, Ontario. There's also hip-hop legend J.J. Johnson, Vancouver's Red Robinson, and Muncie, Indiana's Larry McCabe. Which brings me to a new book from Don St. John, San Francisco's Last Top 40 Disc Jockey, Another One Bites the Dust, 2025, Concala Publishing. The only reason I bought this book was hearing Don on the air during my senior year at Pattonville High School. I was interested to read his take on working at St. Louis's newest soul station, 1380 KWK. The station that swings with those soulful things. Growing up as a radio geek, I loved Top 40, album rock, R&B, and country radio. 1600 Cats was my go-to R&B station starting in junior high. Robert BQ and Doug Eason were my faves. I had a very cool conversation with the Reverend Claude Shelby, Sr. from Salem Baptist in Champaign about Cats. He was as big a fan as I was. Shelby knew the guys that made Cats a superstation in the community. When KWK came on the air, they flat out kicked butt, anchored by longtime Cats personality Bernie Hayes, who had crossed the street, the great Scoop Sanders in the morning, and Don St. John at night. KWK gave us a hip when hip was an awesome adjective. Difference in radio, not heard before in St. Louis. FYI, in 1969, I was a 16-year-old just starting my career at WGNU, just across the Mississippi River from KWK. All I wanted from this book was Don's tenure at KWK, but wow, what I read over 281 pages was a journey that made his career path inspirational. My wife Linda commented last week how I was locked into this book and couldn't put it down. Growing up in Monroe County, Alabama, St. John's story mirrored that of my late friend Tony Clements. As most of you know, Clements grew up in North Carolina. I wish I could hand a copy of this book to T.C. I'll bet I would hear him say, "Been there, done that." With the support and blessing of his family, St. John headed west after high school to Southern California to find his radio career. What blew me away was that St. John and I had two educational experiences in common. He graduated from Cal State Long Beach, the place where I got my degree. He and I also both graduated a few years apart from the Radio Engineering Institute in Glendale, with St. John being the first African-American graduate. Both of us benefited handsomely by having our FCC first-class license. In the 1960s and 70s, having that ticket in your hand meant you could always find work somewhere. His career path quickly led him to Yuma, San Diego, and then the big break at KWK. His success in St. Louis morning radio led to Chicago and 950 WGRT, later WJPC, which did battle with WVON. His recruitment by RKO chain of legendary top 40 stations in the mid-70s began an almost 20-year run at KFRC San Francisco. The KFRC stories make for fascinating reading, whether you're a broadcaster or a listener. St. John was blessed to work alongside some of the best in our business. I loved his stories of how he handled the peaks and valleys during his career. He demonstrates what I talk about every day on the air, attitude and gratitude, the only two things in life you have 100% control over. Hopefully this book report gets an A and inspires you to obtain a copy. Congratulations, Don. Thank you for sharing your story. Top of the morning, courtesy of Vice President Jim Rosso. Notes from the newsroom. Hope Whitman joined Mike Hale on WHMS as the push continues to sell out State Farm Center for Sunday's Illini women's game against USC. She's high on Shauna Green's young, talented team, which in a win against ranked Washington showed glimpse of what they could be and are. It's only going to get better. Jim Dye's column, state revenues fall in January but still up for fiscal year. Like a wheezy car engine that runs in fits and starts, Illinois revenue-producing machines generated mixed results in January, up in some areas, down in others, according to state budget analysts. This has been Mary Moreland reading the News Gazette Part 1 for Thursday, February 5th, 2026. Please stay tuned for Part 2.